2-2. And that's the ball game. Diaz gets him on a slider. Wisdom is gone. And the Cubs fall as they lose by a run.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Low Light, courtesy of Marquee Network. That was John Bushambi calling the end of last night's Cubs game. I want to remind you of this broadcast note. Stop what you're doing and listen to me. The Cubs series against the Reds continues today in Cincinnati. Pregame coverage starts at 2:35 here on The Score with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 3:10. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. You can listen to Saturday Suckage on the free Odyssey app too, by the way. I'm telling you. Yeah, I'm telling you. 760 Texter knows it. Stevie Sunshine, you don't get enough credit. Saturday Morning Suckage with the WBC is the longest running show on The Score. Well, I attribute that to the fact that nobody important listens. So I just keep coming back. But thank you for the thought. We're going to go to the guest hotline. Guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And welcome back to the show from Marquee. He's Andy Martinez. Andy, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm groovy. Could be bitching. Could be evolve into bitching and maybe reach totally rad. Always the ultimate goal. I would like to see the Cubs be groovy. They are 31-33. They are 6.5 games behind the Brewers in a division they should win. They're a half a game out of last place. So it's all jumbled up, which seems like some kind of palliative. I don't think they should be struggling like this. Maybe it wasn't the manager. Maybe taking the manager from the team that they're still trailing the Brewers and they have their manager. So what do you make of where the Cubs are? How do you explain this kind of frustration? Is it as simple as injuries or injuries and the big money players are not playing by big money players? What do you think, Andy?
I think it's the perfect storm of all of that, right? I mean, it's been pretty well documented how some of the star players or higher paid players are just not performing at all. And then you throw in like some of the bullpen struggle that maybe that could have been a strong point going in this year with players that they brought back and Merriweather and Leiter and Alzolay, and only one of them is effective right now and then actually healthy to be pitching. And the biggest thing for me too is the defense. And I thought Friday night's game was a perfect example of just how crucial it is to have good defense, right? I know that pitch that Miguel dropped third strike by Miguel Amaya was switched to a wild pitch, so the runs ended up being earned. But that probably should have stayed a pass ball, and those runs shouldn't have been earned on Justin Steele. And that's what I mean in terms of the defense. The defense hasn't been as good as it was last year. I think when the offense was struggling last year, or the pitching was struggling, or the bullpen was struggling, the defense was always the steady Eddie presence, right? They were always really good defensively. They were converting balls in play into outs. And by just using some advanced metrics, outs above average and defensive run rate, they were top eight in both categories at the end of last year. And right now they're bottom eight in both categories this year. Like, that's a big drop off. And to use yesterday's game as an example, those two runs end up scoring when you have Ali De La Cruz picked off and you don't convert that into the final out. And then you have a drop third strike that you don't convert as another opportunity for the third out of the inning. Those two runs end up scoring. You lose by one run. So you could have been, you know, theoretically up 2-1, and instead you lose 3-2. That's the difference. And over the course of the season, like, that's what starts adding up. And we saw last year where they miss out on the playoffs by one game. Defensive miscues like that could be the difference between playing into October or sitting at home in October.
For this team, yes. Andy, that's a great point. We're talking baseball here, Cubs baseball, with Andy Martinez of Marquee. Jed Hoyer went out of his way last year to talk about the way he was compiling his team, where he was putting it together, where defense, defense, defense. Up the middle, he was, you know, Bellinger's in center, you got a Gold Glover. Dansby Swanson, terrific at shortstop, and he showed it. Nico Hoerner, a shortstop playing second base, that was just terrific. And he talked to, and Ian Happ, a really good defensive player. He talked about that. Mike Tauchman, when he came up, he had the talk-off catch and bringing that game against St. Louis back into the field. And he had the right idea. At times, I think it was an excuse for not getting another bat. I think he was using that as, well, our defense will save us some runs. We don't need to go spend money on a bat. I don't know if that works for you, but help me think it through, right or wrong.
I mean, I think that's part of it, right? Like, I think the I personally, and then maybe everyone agrees or disagrees with me, but like, I personally think defense is the one thing that's overlooked in baseball the most, and that's the one thing you can control, right? Like, you can have a Cy Young caliber pitcher, but he's going to have an off day, and it might happen at the worst opportune time. You could have the best offense in baseball, and they could just run up against a guy who's just pitching really, really well, and you string together two hits and lose. But your defense can always be steady Eddie, right? Like, it should always be pretty level. And so, like, having that baseline, I think, is really, really important. I just don't like the defensive miscues are just so concerning for me watching this team right now. Like, when, like, it's, I keep thinking, like, it's got to turn a corner, but we're, you know, 60 plus games into the season and the corner hasn't been turned, right? Like, Dansby Swanson has taken a step back defensively, and you can attribute to that a little bit to he played for about 2 weeks with a sprained knee before finally going on the IL. Like, maybe that had to do with it. Nico Hoerner has been a little bit better at second base, but he hasn't been as elite as he was last year. Christopher Morel, his struggles defensively at third base have been well documented. And that's an area last year where Nick Madrigal was defensively one of the best third basemen in all of baseball. So, like, all these factors start adding up. And then, yeah, like, a big bat theoretically could solve that. I just don't know if, like, I mean, hindsight being 2020, like, sure, Matt Chapman would have been the ideal option at third base. But, like, in free agency, there wasn't a ton of great options. I think they got the best one that fit them in Cody Bellinger. And maybe he's starting to turn a corner offensively, but, like, to me, it always comes back to this defense not being as elite as it was last year, at least through 63, 64 odd games this season.
For the purposes of our discussion, Andy, Michael Busch seemingly should have answered that, and he had a week. That was where he was really Michael Busch, and he was, oh, that's the guy who is being blocked getting to the major leagues. He had a week, and then he hasn't done much, and the least he can do is make an accurate throw, and David Bodie should be able to tag somebody. And they couldn't. And so if he can't really hit, or you can't rely on him, and you've placed so much emphasis on defense, you've never seen Pete Crow Armstrong hit at the major league level. He's been the Martin Maldonado of the Cubs. So do you put him in center and Bellinger at first? And do you go back to that and sort of hold your breath and say, we got to catch the ball and then hope we get enough runs, which makes your pitching staff, your starting staff, and your bullpen, I mean, if you're not going to get any blowouts, you're going to be dead by September, and we saw what happened last year. Wouldn't that be trending the same way as we saw last year?
That's kind of what we're seeing already, right? We've seen Craig Counsell deploy Cody Bellinger at first base after not using him at first base all season, even when Pete Crow Armstrong and Cody Bellinger were overlapping before PCA got sent down. It was Bellinger in center, and PCA was a pinch runner or Belly was getting a DH spot and PCA was starting in center. Now we're starting to see Bellinger play first base a little bit more. And part of that, yeah, is Michael Busch's defensive struggles at first base. But we always knew that was going to be somewhat of a work in progress this season. And I think having Bellinger is that security blanket, right? Where if the runway you're giving him isn't enough and it's costing you, like, you can always fall back on Cody Bellinger. I think their best defensive alignment probably right now, at least, is with Bellinger at first base and PCA in center field. And to me, what's wild about how good PCA defensively is in center field is he's got I believe right around a 1.0 baseball reference war, which is like crazy because, like, as you mentioned, his hitting isn't been out of this world, but his defense is that elite that it's carrying him while playing like half of the amount of games that everyone else has played. Like, he is just that good defensively that if you have him in center field, like, that should mitigate any issues defensively in the outfield. And now you add Cody Bellinger in first base and you hope that Dansby Swanson and Nico Hoerner can get back to the level they are. Like, and you start seeing maybe like a little window into, like, this is how the defense gets back to maybe not a top five, top six defense like they were last year, but at least you know, a top half of a top half of baseball defense that isn't costing you games.
Andy Martinez is my guest. Marquee Network is where you can find his work, marqueenetwork.com, and he's writing there about the Cubs. That's what we're talking about here on The Score. Cubs and Reds play again this afternoon. The Reds are scorching hot. This is bad time to catch the Reds when you're a bad team as the Cubs are playing. And yet, as bad and wonky as they've looked and as bad as their good players have been when they've been there, Swanson most notably, I guess the fact they're only 6.5 games behind the Brewers means the Brewers haven't taken much advantage to run away with the division as possible. But something's got to change with the Cubs. Is it a trade? Is it a stick? Is it you concede, God, our defense sucks. We might as well find some way, start trying to hit the ball out of the park. Which way would you go with this team right now, Andy?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear, like, at least what their plan is. They're going to find ways to supplement their team come the trade deadline. The issue right now is, like, the trade deadline is about, you know, 2 months away, a little under. So reinforcements, barring some crazy, you know, trade, adding like the Luis Reyes trade, San Diego, like we're not seeing that happening most likely. So you just have to have these guys that we've talked about all this whole time. Like, you have to have Ian Happ start hitting more. You have to have Cody Bellinger start hitting a little bit more. You have to start having all these guys just get back to what they are offensively to give you a chance to really get back in this race. Because you're right, like 6.5 games right now is not, I mean, it's a deficit for sure, but it's not like insurmountable by any stretch. We've seen that kind of deficit be turned around. I mean, this was the Cubs team last season that was 10 games under 500 and rallied back to go 10 games over. So like, it's not impossible to overcome that, but like, you want to start seeing that soon. And you hope that in the summer months with, you know, better hitter environments, theoretically, like you can start seeing that corner. Cause there's not going to be a reinforcement probably coming until around the trade deadline. So like, you have to ride it out with these guys and hope that this is the guys that can get you. Cause the other thing too is like, they pulled almost all of their levers from the minor leagues, right? Like, they called the PCA. They've brought up some of these young pitchers like Ben Brown or Hayden Wesneski. Like, they've been pulling all these levers. Like, you're getting to a point where you don't have too many levers to pull. And do you really want to start pulling some of these star prospects up into the major leagues before they're necessarily ready just to try and maybe help you win one or two games in June? Probably not. So, like, it's a really precarious situation where you just have to have these guys start playing to the back of their baseball card, as the saying goes.
I haven't seen an update on Seiya Suzuki. Left the game, left oblique. He's had oblique problems before. The idea of Mike Tauchman in there, frankly, you know you're getting better defense. Seiya is a liability on defense, and Tauchman's wonderful. And Tauchman, by war, is their Cubs' best player, which is wonderful for him. It's a great story. If he's your best player, you need another team. You find yourself under 500. I don't know if you've seen an update on Seiya this morning.
No, we should get it closer to game time at least. I would be shocked if he's in the lineup today. If this was September and he was okay, he's probably playing. But you're more likely than not going to play it safe. The concerning thing if you're a Cubs fan is that this is just like it's been a reoccurring problem. It's the third time in the last 2 years that there's been an oblique or potentially an oblique issue with Seiya Suzuki. And we've seen him at his best, like at his best offensively. He can be an elite hitter. Like, he can be the type of guy that carries an offense, like the type of guy we keep saying that the Cubs need. Like, he can be that guy, but he's just never been able to put it together for a full sample size. Like, just needs to stay healthy. And it's a little concerning that he gets hit by a ball and the oblique starts firing up. Like, it's just another red flag and a are you kidding me moment, because, you know, just when it seems like maybe you're starting to turn a corner a little bit with everyone starting to get a little bit healthy, one of your big boppers is the guy that goes down.
Yeah, well, Cubs 2024. There you go. There's your story. Andy, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Andy Martinez of Marquee talking. You see his work on their website and Cubs Reds again. You can hear that here on the Score. 2:35 is Zach's pregame show, and 3:10 is the first pitch. Cubs and Reds, game two of that series. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, you know, Kevin Warren, him and he made another performance, more performative art from the sanctimonious beggar in front of the Chamber of Commerce, and talking about world-class cities. And so his idea of a glass and metal cyst on the lakefront would make Chicago world-class. It struck me that he should get a world-class pantsing. So I'm going to try to do that next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sure.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage. So there was this headline in the Sun-Times Friday. Mayor's pricey hair and makeup. In 1 year, Brandon Johnson's campaign has spent $30,000 on hair and makeup. All to be Kevin Warren's sock puppet. This from the Trib on Wednesday. The Chicago Bears' bid for billions of dollars in public assistance to build a new lakefront stadium was the elephant on the agenda Tuesday at the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce annual meeting. With a crowd of high-powered business leaders watching, Bears president and CEO Kevin Warren repeated his pitch for the new dome stadium in a keynote address. He presented the stadium as a surefire growth starter for downtown Chicago. You cannot make progress only by playing defense, Warren said. Well, think it. By the time Warren gave his impassioned plea, the two most pivotal members of the audience, Mayor Brandon Johnson and J.B. Pritzker, had left the event. But I'm sure makeup looked good in an exit announcing he did not want to be Kevin Warren's sock puppet anymore, right, Mr. Mayor? Pritzker has not yet met with the Bears about their stadium plan. He has publicly expressed doubt about the funding aspect of it. That probably won't be on HBO. That probably won't be on Hard Knocks. Just the blowhard stuff from Kevin Warren about Chicago not making progress. Wow, need progress. Warren, remember, said that glass and metal cyst he wants on the lakefront is a sign of a world-class city. He did. He said that when it started. We can become world-class. Really. It would pockmark the lakefront. And it would be shamed by the iconic skyline, the history of the buildings in Chicago. Sears Tower, Hancock Building, Frank Lloyd Wright houses, Mies van der Rohe's legacy, Carbide & Carbon, the Art Institute, a throwback to the White City, to the 1893 World Columbian Exposition, Kevin, the World's Fair. Kevin Warren wants Chicago to be a world-class city, he said, and his head coach talks like a goof. Start there, Kevin. Start there and stop asking for billions you shouldn't get. I did some research, and from what I could cobbled together, Chicago had 21 Michelin-starred restaurants this year. ranking in the top 20 in the world class in the world among world class restaurants. Football stadiums, to my knowledge, aren't known for world class culinary experiences, Kevin. Chicago has the third greatest number of 2- and 3-star restaurants in the nation. Chicago has one of the busiest airports in the world. The Toradol-addicted groups of large men will show up 10 times a year even without your greed, Kevin. You know who else comes here, Kevin? You know who else? People. Tourists. Visitors. Millions and millions of visitors. And they love Chicago as a destination. More than any other place in the nation, Kevin. Chicago has been named the best big city in the U.S. for 7 straight years by readers of Condé Nast Traveler magazine. That was announced last October. The award is part of Condé Nast Traveler's 2023 Reader's Choice Awards and was based on surveys of more than 500,000 people who read Condé Nast. 500,000 people. That sounds like a worldly number. Here's what Condé Nast said in naming Chicago the best big city in the United States, Kevin. Quote, it's no wonder Chicago is topping this list again. A world-class destination. Condé Nast knows you're out the world. Condé Nast saying a world-class destination known for its impressive architecture, first-rate museums, brilliant chefs, and massive brewing scene. It'll take several repeat visits to get through your list of must-dos. Most people start downtown from the Magnificent Mile to the ritzy Gold Coast to funky Old Town. There are 77 neighborhoods to explore where you'll find cutting-edge restaurants, chilled-out corner bars, and no matter where you go, some of the most pleasant people you'll find anywhere. A world-class destination, says Condé Nast, Kevin. World-class. Time Out magazine surveyed its thousands and thousands of readers around the globe. That's the world. Globe, world, Kevin. And named it the 14th best city in the world. That's kind of world class, right? There are more than 30 Fortune 500 companies headquartered in Chicago. Kind of world class. There's the University of Chicago, Kevin. They invented the bomb there. And what they did was they did it under the stands of the football stadium. They don't play football anymore. They just do stuff like that.
I didn't know that.
They invented the bomb.
Wow. My girlfriend goes there. I hope she's not doing something with her free time.
The bomb's been done. She'd have to do something else, Robbie.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Then there's an arena in Chicago, Kevin, where Michael Jordan became the best known human in the world. Perhaps you've heard of Michael Jordan, Kevin Warren. Kevin Warren went on to say, he was quoted in this Tribune article, every time that we play on television here in Chicago, and especially when we play on national television, the entire world is looking at Chicago. We have a unique time here with the Chicago Bears to not only build a great football team, to build a great organization, but to build a world-class stadium that will only empower everyone in this room. Really? I thought we established we're world-class. But see, that's Kevin Warren's Notre Dame teaching. That's the sanctimonious huckstering that goes on at Notre Dame and comes out of Notre Dame. Empowering people through asphyxiating debt to the benefit of a billionaire. I was not in that room when Kevin Warren spoke. So I can't feel empowered. But I'm sure people walked out of that room humming the theme from Rocky. Dun, 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 dun. I mean, that's what Kevin Warren does. That's what sanctimony does. The choice. And remember, death is not an option. Kevin Warren's laughably inadequate sales pitch for a new toy, or Matt Nagy's laughably inadequate game plan for Justin Fields' debut. Does it matter to people whether Chicago is considered world class or how it's judged, or whether it matters to people that Kevin Warren doesn't think Chicago is a world class city? Not until he gets what he wants. He's been begging for a while on that, right? And That's how you become world class. You give Kevin Warren what he wants. Arlington Heights is not world class because they won't give Kevin Warren what he wants. The school districts say, you're going to pay your property taxes, and we're going to benefit by them. You're not making America dumber. See, I guess the Bears, Kevin Warren doesn't mind making America dumber, making students of Illinois dumber by denying them the property tax money. Kevin Warren is a hypocrite. We want to pay our fair share, but we want a cap on property taxes. Well, then you wouldn't necessarily be paying your fair share, Kevin. That's not how it works. I became a writer because I was no math involved, but I understand you can't have that both ways. All the sanctimony in the world is not going to write that. How is being world-class judged? I just went through a list of how I judge it. Restaurants, culture, people who pass through. You know what? We are world-class when it comes to criminals, too, by the way. We're world-class when it comes to the mob. We're world-class when it comes to gangsters. Al Capone. It took Michael Jordan, the best-known human in the world, really to supplant Al Capone as the response that so many people told this story. This is anecdotal of you're from Chicago, and then they make the gun mechanic. Capone. Capone, yeah. Okay. Embrace Al Capone. Which gang murders stand up to the St. Valentine's Day massacre? Right? That's a world class and romantically kind of described, a romantically experienced, a romantically described mass murder. You line them all up on St. Patrick's Day and Bugs Moran was in his flower shop or whatever it was. But there's a romantic notion about it. There's a Godfather-like notion about it. I mean, you watch The Godfather, Godfather 2, Goodfellas. They're bad guys. They're all bad guys.
I went on a gangsters and ghost tours here in Chicago. They're literally doing ghost tours about Al Capone.
They always did ghost tours here, and the gangster tours are there. Who led this, or where was this group?
Robbie? It was someone from Second City. You can find it online. I went on. It was actually quite enjoyable, but they tell the whole history of Al Capone. But it's like, this person killed people, and they're teaching me about it. So they are romanticizing it.
They are. And look at it. Come on, Michael Corleone. We love it. Don Corleone. Yeah, we like. These guys are bad people. They kill people. Michael Corleone killed his own brother. He's a hero. And the Chicago version of whatever, look, John Dillinger, public enemy number one. There's a really terrific story, romanticized version of how he got dead. The lady in red, she turned on him. They walked out of the Biograph Theater, bang, bang, bang. That's it. John Dillinger. That was as big as it got at the time. Al Capone, right? See you later. One of the greatest, and I mean greatest, bits of investigative journalism of the corruption in Chicago that exposed it top to bottom. And we are world class when it comes to corrupt. It was called The Mirage. Robbie, there's a book. You should read it. It's written by heroes. One of whom is Pam Zekman. A phenomenal reporter at the time, the Chicago Sun-Times, Daily News, what was, and Zay Smith, a young reporter, and Bill Rechtenwald, who would go on to become a legend. They would open a fake bar, hence the name, The Mirage. And they would be visited by many city officials, all of whom had a palm out. This was going so well as they began to open up the bar. 60 Minutes partnered with them, filming everything, hidden cameras, and this is going back to late 60s, early 70s. It's The Mirage. Bill Rechtenwald became a legend. Pam Zekman became his legend. Zay Smith is a legend to us writers. And they blew the lid off. Everybody who came in looking for money, it was the mirage. It was the greatest bit of investigative journalism. One of the greatest, certainly in history, and it was here in Chicago. We're world class when it comes to investigative journalists. So I'm guessing at this point, I've made my points about world class and Kevin Warren, the blowhard about world class, because he's going to huff and puff till he gets what he wants. And I'm guessing that he judges world-class cities by how much he can sucker taxpayers into giving billionaires he works for. That, in my world, would be world-class stupid. Warren has lived here before. But he sure sounds like world-class, out-of-town stupid. If that's what you think of Chicago, you're welcome to leave. Busiest airport in the world. One of the busiest airports in the world will be happy to book you a flight out of here, pal. All right, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back with, speaking of stupid talk, we had a dumb off with interim Bears coach Matt Eberflus and Illinois joke Tim Beckman. But now suddenly Pedro Grifol wants in on the action. We got some Sox stuff to talk about. After this. Saturday Suckage, thank you for listening. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're moving forward with a new laid foundation on rock, not on muck, on rock.
We're going to work every day as hard as we can possibly can to kick your ass at 7:10.
We're flat.
I like homers.
I like what we're doing.
I'm not going to talk about that.
He's a tick away. Who knows?
Why not us, right?
If I'm the smartest guy in the room, we got a problem.
I guess the word of the day is fast.
We need to play faster. We just got to play a different style of baseball. You know, we got to play fast. If you're not playing fast baseball in the big leagues, you know, you're not going to have success.
That was the fastest. Was it the fastest?
We're going to be playing different because we're going to be playing the faster games.
We practiced pretty damn fast. It was good speed.
If I'm the smartest guy in the room, we got a problem.
Nicely done. Robbie Triano, there's some of the dumb things Pedro Grifol says. We don't have enough show to capture all of them. Like last week when they blew 4- and 5- run leads to the Cubs, said, no, there's no one to blame for this. Really? You just blew 4- and 5- run leads. How do you not blame somebody for that? Last night, he finally figured out who to blame. Himself. Didn't know the rules, didn't know the situation, didn't know he could challenge, didn't know when to challenge, and thought he could get her, and they would have been right. They would have won the challenge. But Pedro wasn't. I mean, we need somebody to sleep in the dugout. There was Tony La Russa. He could have done that for everybody. And now he still might. Still might again. That was raised in sports discussion this week. If you look at the major league standings from top to bottom, like you can do that on MLB.com. You just division or wild card or league or MLB. Just do MLB. There's your White Sox. Last. By a lot. The only team without 20 victories.
Is that bad?
They're like 10 miles behind the Florida Marlins. Think about that.
They should just be the only team we talk about on the show.
Good thing the Sox don't play in the AL East, right? And there's Garrett Crochet beating an AL East team. Beat Boston last night. I mean, Crochet's pitching like a guy who wants to be traded, could be traded, should be traded, pitching well enough to be traded, one earned run, 10 Ks, 6 innings, and the Sox snapped their 14-game losing streak, or their losing streak at 14. Sox hit 3 home runs. They got their June win out of the way. And here's the good news for those of us, haters, I guess we might be considered. They remain on at 16-48, they remain on pace to tie the 1962 Mets for the worst winning percentage ever. The 40-120 Mets of 1962. But here's the thing. At least the 62 Mets were fun. They were an expansion team. Birds flew out of Casey Stengel's hat. He managed them. The pitching staff had two Bob Millers and a Vinegar Benjamizel. True. You can look it up. The roster also included Choo Choo Coleman, future Miracle Met manager Gil Hodges, Dr. Strangelove Marv Throneberry, and Don Zimmer. Popeye, yes, Popeye was a 1962 Met. That crappy team was fun. This crappy Sox team is Garry Crochet and a pile of insults to fans. Starting with the chairman insulting fans, laughingly saying, we're not going to be in the Otani Derby. I'd say, well, who'd want to be in a Derby for the best player in the game? And insulting fans with the plum-dumb manager you heard coming in, who this week it seems that he used his relationship with the chairman as a neener, 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 as a shield to tell the ill-equipped GM, who should want to fire him, but apparently can't because he's tight with the manager, is tight with the chairman. It's like stupid squared for a team that is, for a franchise that is used to that. I mean, last night the manager doesn't know the rules, doesn't know the situation, doesn't, makes you want to fire Rick Hahn all over again, doesn't it? He's the one who foisted Pedro Grifol on this franchise, and he's still here. And then, of course, it got worse. Last night it got worse. Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago, is interviewing Paul DeJong in the dugout.
All right, Paul's coming over. All right, Paul, take us through the at-bat. You tied the game first.
Well, we had some fan interference before that. Some flying full bottles of liquor. But anyway, Vaughn did a great job getting on for me. Just tried to get a nice base hit to score him. Snuck it over the infield, took advantage of the errant throw. Kolas, great at-bat. Gets it past the infielder. We scored two runs, and here we are. It's a good inning so far.
You were on deck. Were you almost getting hit by these bottles?
Well, I saw Vaughn almost got hit, and then after Vaughn was going up to the plate, I saw another one fly. And a kid in the front row had to leave. He got hit in the head. Rowdy crowd here tonight on Friday, but we're out here to play. So we're having fun.
Can't beat fun at the old ballpark. Great line that came out of all of this mess, of the danger. Phil Rosenthal, formerly of the Chicago Tribune, said maybe the bottle came from outside the ballpark. That's outstanding. Popular, and I want to tell you this, it's still getting worse. Paul Sullivan wrote this week in the Trib, he was listing all the ways the Sox suck, and thank God the internet is infinite. You can just keep going and going and going. He wrote this: popular Sox analyst Steve Stone is in the final year of his deal, would have to be re-signed. Without Stone, Sox broadcasts would have to rely on unproven play-by-play man John Schriffen, who has been polarizing in his first 2 months on the job with a style that grates on fans. Imagine how totally and completely unwatchable this team would be without Stone. A team that could tie the 1962 Mets, worst team ever in baseball, for worst winning percentage. And then you wouldn't have Steve Stone. You know what? You'd be better. You'd be better off without an announcer, without any announcers. No announcer, no color man.
Just mute?
Why not? Just show the play. Show the replays. You can have graphics describe what's going on. I mean, I don't want AI to do this, but you could have AI do it with, you don't need an announcer.
Oh, no, no,
yeah.
No.
You call it the ballpark experience at home. When you go to a game, when you're not dodging bullets and bottles at 35th and Shields, there's no Steve Stone in your ear. There are instances where you have, I grew up in L.A. People bought transistor radios to Dodger Stadium and were listening to the game and were mocked for it. But guess what? They were listening to Vin Scully. They didn't need people to tell them. They didn't need someone to tell them what the game was. They listened to the best there ever was. Vin Scully's in your ear describing baseball. That is outstanding. But when you go to a game here, and you wear Kevlar or 35th and shields, there's no Steve Stone in your ear. There's no Steve Stone making you smarter. There's no Steve Stone offering stories. So make it that way at home. I mean, it'll be cheaper, and when you're the small market White Sox, they like cheap. Why not? I know it's been tried before. I believe it was there was a football game. I think NBC did it. I don't know if it was an NFL game or a college game. Do you remember this, Robbie? Do you hear any? There was a game with no announcers, and it was down a distance. Well, you see down a distance anyways, and you could use graphics to describe whatever pitch and catch, runner, however it goes. Chiron guy's got to be good. Why couldn't you do that with baseball? Why? You've got teams that still don't let announcers travel. They're calling it off TV. Can't you watch it on yourself? Can't you have a guy sit in a control room and type it?
Well, for the NBA Finals, I know they have two broadcasts. They have the broadcasts on ESPN with all the announcers, and then they have a Skyview broadcast, which is on their app, which is no announcers, and you just see the game. So they could do that. They could just do that.
Doesn't that make you queasy, that view?
Oh, yeah. I get nauseous every time.
So why do they do that?
Torture us. I don't know.
Well, I know that networks have tried different things with, and Jason Benetti, the beloved Jason Benetti, was doing the baseball metrics version. They would have several different broadcasts going. And he and Eduardo Perez, and who else? There's somebody else. There would be a three-man.
Carl Ravitch?
No. They had another decimal head.
Decimal head?
Yeah. Ed Decimal Head. I called Bernstein that, Danny Decimal.
Wait, what's a decimal head?
Danny Decimal, yeah. And they did that. Why wouldn't you? Okay, if Steve Stone leaves, you're going to try to trade Louis Robert because he's always hurt. You probably trade Garrett Crochet because he's going to be your biggest haul. And in 2 years when he can walk away anyways, you're still not going to be any good. You're a horrible organization. You're badly run, ill-equipped at so many important spots. So you save money. If Steve Stone leaves, what? He's it. He's the most, that and the milkshake. That's the most interesting thing. And now to get the milkshake, you have to risk life and limb because bottles are flying, if not bullets as well.
Do you feel like this franchise is like at the rock bottom part of it? Owner sucks, team sucks, manager sucks. Play-by-play guy even sucks.
Stadiums, well, they're checking all the boxes,
stadium
aren't
kinda
they?
Stadium kind of sucks, too. So I just feel like this is a team at the end of the rope.
Snarky little 847 texter. Bless you. Every Sox game on TV has no play-by-play announcer. Nicely done.
We ain't taking that.
Well, you just did. More haters. And couple of textures, remember the game I'm remembering, and 334. Hey, Rosie, the game to what you're referring was an NFL game, the Jets at Miami, and it was played in December 1981, I believe. Another texture, 847, Jets in Miami, I think. Yeah.
I think it was that game then.
And it was probably the Jets at Miami game. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think it was that game.
So I'll close with this. Joey Ice at my Trader Joe's sent me a link to an Axios piece about John Schriffen after he was hired to be the play-by-play voice of Sox TV. It was one of those things where there's five things to know about the new Sox broadcaster. And the last item read like this. Noted, he has a side hustle. On top of his busy broadcast schedule, he somehow found time to invent a new dog waste system called Poupe. I'm reading from this Axios piece. In case you didn't expect to hear where that was going, didn't see where that was going, Axios, five things you should know about John Schriffen, then hired as the Sox broadcast voice, TV voice. He has a side hustle. On top of his busy broadcast schedule, he somehow found time to invent a new dog waste system called Poupe. And as Joey Ice said to me upon sending me the link, the jokes just write themselves. I'm Steve Rosenblum. I'm Steve Poupe. Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. I'm Stevie Suckage. And take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk Bears with Habarkish. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hey, it's my first game.
You're good. Don't worry about it. All good. If any of those radio losers clip it and try to make fun of you, nobody cares about them anymore.
We're moving forward with a new laid foundation on rock, not on muck, on rock.
We're going to work every day as hard as we can possibly can to kick your ass at 7:10.
We're flat.
I like homers.
I like what we're doing.
I'm not going to talk about that.
He's a tick away.
Who knows?
Why not us, right?
If I'm the smartest guy in the room, we got a problem.
I guess the word of the day is fast.
We need to play faster. We just got to play a different style of baseball. You know, we got to play fast. If you're not playing fast baseball in the big leagues, you know, you're not going to have success.
That was the fastest. Was it the fastest?
We're going to be playing different because we're going to be playing the faster games.
We practiced pretty damn fast. It was good speed.
If I'm the smartest guy in the room, we got a problem.
Nicely done. Robbie Triano, there's some of the dumb things Pedro Grifol says. We don't have enough show to capture all of them. Like last week when they blew 4- and 5-run leads to the Cubs, said, no, there's no one to blame for this. Really? You just blew 4- and 5-run leads. How do you not blame somebody for that? Last night, he finally figured out who to blame. Himself. Didn't know the rules, didn't know the situation, didn't know he could challenge, didn't know when to challenge. And thought he could get her, and they would have been right. They would have won the challenge. But Pedro wasn't. I mean, we need somebody to sleep in the dugout. There was Tony La Russa. He could have done that for everybody. And now he still might. Still might again. That was raised in sports discussion this week. If you look at the major league standings from top to bottom, like you can do that on MLB.com. You just. Division or wild card or league or MLB. Just do MLB. There's your White Sox. Last by a lot. The only team without 20 victories.
Is that bad?
They're like 10 miles behind the Florida Marlins. Think about that.
They should just be the only team we talk about on this show.
Good thing the Sox don't play in the AL East, right? And there's Garrett Crochet beating an AL East team. Beat Boston last night. I mean, Crochet's pitching like a guy who wants to be traded, could be traded, should be traded. Pitching well enough to be traded. One earned run, 10 Ks, 6 innings. And the Sox snapped their 14-game losing streak. Or their losing streak at 14. Sox hit 3 home runs. They got their June win out of the way. And here's the good news for those of us, haters, I guess we might be considered. They remain on at 16-48. They remain on pace to tie the 1962 Mets for the worst winning percentage ever. The 40-120 Mets of 1962. But here's the thing. At least the 62 Mets were fun. They were an expansion team. Birds flew out of Casey Stengel's hat. He managed them. The pitching staff had 2 Bob Millers and a vinegar Benj Mazel. True, you can look it up. The roster also included Choo Choo Coleman, future Miracle Met manager Gil Hodges, Dr. Strangelove Marv Throneberry, and Don Zimmer. Popeye, yes, Popeye was a 1962 Met. That crappy team was fun. This crappy Sox team is Garrett Crochet and a pile of insults to fans. Starting with the chairman insulting fans, laughingly saying, oh, we're not going to be in the Ohtani Derby. I'd say, well, who'd want to be in a Derby for the best player in the game? And insulting fans with the plum dumb manager you heard coming in, who this week it seems that he used his relationship with the chairman as a neener, 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 as a shield to tell the ill-equipped GM who should want to fire him, but apparently can't because he's tight with the manager, is tight with the chairman. It's like stupid squared for a team that is, for a franchise that is used to that. I mean, last night the manager doesn't know the rules, doesn't know the situation, doesn't, makes you want to fire Rick Hahn all over again, doesn't it? He's the one who foisted Pedro Grifol on this franchise, and he's still here. And then, of course, it got worse. Last night it got worse. Chuck Garfine, NBC Sports Chicago, is interviewing Paul DeJong in the dugout.
All right, Paul's coming over. All right, Paul, take us through the at-bat. You tied the game first.
Well, we had some fan interference before that. Some flying full bottles of liquor. But anyway, Vaughn did a great job getting on for me. Just tried to get a nice base hit to score him. Snuck it over the infield, took advantage of the errant throw. Kolas, great at bat, gets it past the infielder. We score two runs, and here we are. It's a good inning so far.
You were on deck. Were you almost getting hit by these bottles?
Well, I saw Vaughn almost got hit. And then after Vaughn was going up to the plate, I saw another one fly. And a kid in the front row had to leave. He got hit in the head. Rowdy crowd here tonight on Friday, but we're out here to play. So we're having fun.
Can't beat fun at the old ballpark. Great line that came out of all of this mess, of the danger. Phil Rosenthal, formerly of the Chicago Tribune, said maybe the bottle came from outside the ballpark. That's outstanding. Popular, and I want to tell you this, it's still getting worse. Paul Sullivan wrote this week in the Trib. He was listing all the ways the Sox suck. And thank God the internet is infinite. You can just keep going and going and going. He wrote this. Popular Sox analyst Steve Stone is in the final year of his deal. Would have to be re-signed. Without Stone, Sox broadcast would have to rely on unproven play-by-play man John Schriffen, who has been polarizing in his first 2 months on the job with a style that grates on fans. Imagine how totally and completely unwatchable this team would be without Stone, a team that could tie the 1962 Mets, worst team ever in baseball, for worst winning percentage, and then you wouldn't have Steve Stone. You know what? You'd be better off without an announcer, without any announcers. No announcer, no color man.
Just mute?
Why not? Just show the play. Show the replays. You can have graphics describe what's going on. I mean, I don't want AI to do this, but you could have AI do it with, you don't need an announcer.
Oh, no, no,
yeah.
No.
You call it the ballpark experience at home. When you go to a game, when you're not dodging bullets and bottles at 35th and Shields, there's no Steve Stone in your ear. There are instances where you have. I grew up in L.A. People bought transistor radios to Dodger Stadium and were listening to the game and were mocked for it. But guess what? They were listening to Vin Scully. They didn't need people to tell them. They didn't need someone to tell them what the game was. They listened to the best there ever was. Vin Scully's in your ear describing baseball. That is outstanding. But when you go to a game here and you wear Kevlar or 35th and Shields, there's no Steve Stone in your ear. There's no Steve Stone making you smarter. There's no Steve Stone offering stories. So make it that way at home. I mean, it'll be cheaper. And when you're the small market White Sox, they like cheap. Why not? I know it's been tried before. I believe there was a football game. I think NBC did it. I don't know if it was an NFL game or a college game. Do you remember this, Robbie? Do you hear any? There was a game with no announcers. And it was down a distance. Well, you see down a distance anyways. And you could use graphics to describe whatever pitch and catch, runner, however it goes. The Chiron guy's got to be good. Why couldn't you do that with baseball? Why you've got teams that still don't let announcers travel. They're calling it off TV. Can't you watch it on yourself? Can't you have a guy sit in a control room and type it?
Well, for the NBA Finals, I know they have two broadcasts. They have the broadcast on ESPN with all the announcers, and then they have a Skyview broadcast, which is on their app, which is no announcers, and you just see the game. So they could do that. They could just do that.
Doesn't that make you queasy, that view?
Oh, yeah. I get nauseous every time.
So why do they do that?
Torture us. I don't know.
Well, I know that networks have tried different things with, and Jason Benetti, the beloved Jason Benetti, was doing the baseball metrics version. They would have several different broadcasts going. And he and Eduardo Perez, and who else? There's somebody else. There would be a three-man.
Carl Ravitch?
No. They had another decimal head.
Decimal head?
Yeah. Ed Decimal Head. I called Bernstein that, Danny Decimal.
Wait, what's a decimal head?
Danny Decimal, yeah. And they did that. Why wouldn't you? Okay, if Steve Stone leaves, you're going to try to trade Louis Robert because he's always hurt. You probably trade Garrett Crochet because he's going to be your biggest haul. And in 2 years when he can walk away anyways, you're still not going to be any good. You're a horrible organization. You're badly run, ill-equipped at so many important spots. So you save money at Steve Stone leaves. What? He's it. He's the most that and the milkshake. That's the most interesting thing. And now to get the milkshake, you have to risk life and limb because bottles are flying, if not bullets as well.
Do you feel like this franchise is like at the rock bottom part of it? Owner sucks. Team sucks. Manager sucks. Play-by-play guy even sucks.
Stadium, well, they're checking all the boxes,
stadium
aren't
kinda
they?
Stadium kind of sucks, too. So I just feel like this is a team at the end of the rope.
Snarky little 847 texter, bless you. Every Sox game on TV has no play-by-play announcer. Nicely done.
We ain't taking that.
Well, you just did. More haters. And couple of textures, remember the game I'm remembering, and 334, hey, Rosie, the game to what you're referring was an NFL game, the Jets at Miami, and it was played in December 1981, I believe. Another texture, 847, Jets in Miami, I think. Yeah.
I think it was that game then.
And it was probably the Jets at Miami game. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think it was that game.
So I'll close with this. Joey Ice at my Trader Joe's sent me a link to an Axios piece about John Schriffen after he was hired to be the play-by-play voice of Sox TV. It was one of those things where there's five things to know about the new Sox broadcaster. And the last item read like this. Noted, he has a side hustle. On top of his busy broadcast schedule, he somehow found time to invent a new dog waste system called Poupe. I'm reading from this Axios piece. In case you didn't expect to hear where that was going, didn't see where that was going, Axios, five things you should know about John Schriffen, then hired as the Sox broadcast voice, TV voice. He has a side hustle. On top of his busy broadcast schedule, he somehow found time to invent a new dog waste system called Poupe. And as Joey Ice said to me upon sending me the link, the jokes just write themselves. I'm Steve Rosenblum. I'm Steve Poupe. Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. I'm Stevie Suckage. And take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk Bears with Habarkish. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hey, it's my first game.
You're good. Don't worry about it. All good.
If any of those radio losers clip it and try to make fun of you, nobody cares about them anymore.